Volume 5, Number 612, The Morning of the Resurrection. The women resume working at the ointments, which during the night, in the cool of the courtyard, have become a thick pomade. John and Peter think that they ought to tidy up the supper room, cleaning the tableware but putting everything back, as if the supper were just over. "He told us," says John. "He had also said, 'Do not fall asleep.' He had said, 'Do not be proud, Peter. Do you not know that the hour of the trial is about to come?' And he said, 'You will deny me.'" Peter weeps again, while with deep grief he says, "And I did deny him." "Enough, Peter. Now you have collected yourself. Enough of this torture." "No, never enough. If I should become as old as the ancient patriarchs, if I should live the 700 or the 900 years of Adam and of his first grandchildren, I would never cease having this torture." "Do you not hope in his mercy?" "Yes, I do. If I did not believe in that, I should be like the Iscariot, a desperate man. But even if he forgives me from the bosom of his father, where he has gone back, I will not forgive myself. I who said, 'I do not know him.' Because at that moment, it was dangerous to know him. Because I was ashamed of being his disciple. Oh, because I was afraid of being tortured. He was going towards his death, and I thought of saving my life. And to save it, I rejected him like a woman in sin who, after giving birth to a child, rejects the fruit of her womb, which is dangerous to keep, before her unaware husband comes back. I'm worse than an adulteress. Worse than—" Mary Magdalene, attracted by their shouts, comes in. "Do not shout like that. Mary can hear you. She is so exhausted. She has no strength left, and everything hurts her. Your useless, unseemly shouts renew her torture of what you have been. See? See, John? A woman can order me to be quiet. And she is right. Because we, the males sacred to the Lord, have only been able to lie or to run away. The women have been brave. You, a little more than a woman, so young and pure you are, were able to remain. We, the strong ones, the males, have fled. Oh, how the world must despise me. Tell me, woman. You were right. Put your foot on my lips that lied. On the sole of your sandal there is perhaps a little of his blood. And only that blood mixed with the mud of the road can give the denier a little forgiveness, a little peace. I must get accustomed to the scorn of the world. What am I? Tell me, what am I?" "You are full of pride," replies calmly the Magdalene. "Sorrow also. But you must believe that out of 10 parts of your sorrow, 5, I do not want to offend you by saying 6, 5, are of your sorrow of being one who can be despised. And I will really scorn you if you continue only to moan and get into a frenzy, just like a foolish woman. What is done is done. And no unseemly shouting can repair it or cancel it. It only serves to draw attention and beg for undeserved pity. Be manly in your repentance. Do not shout. Act. know who I was. But when I realized that I was more despicable than vomit, I did not fall into fits of convulsions. I acted in public without being indulgent towards myself and without asking for indulgence. Did the world despise me? It was right. I had deserved it. The world said, a new whim of the prostitute. And it called blasphemy my recourse to Jesus. It was right. The world remembered my previous behavior that justified such remarks. So, the world had to convince itself that the sinner Mary no longer existed. By means of facts, I convinced the world. Do the same and be quiet. You are severe, Mary, objects John. More with myself than with other people, but I admit it. I do not have the light hand of the mother. She is love. I lashed my feelings with a whip of my will, and I will do so even more. Do you think that I have forgiven myself for being lustful? No, I have not. But I only say so to myself, and I will always repeat it to myself. I shall die consumed with this secret regret of having been my own corrupter, with this inconsolable sorrow of having profaned myself and not having been able to give him but a trampled-on heart. See, I have worked more than all the others at the bombs, and with greater courage than the others I will uncover him. Oh, God! What will he be like now? Mary of Magdala grows pale at the very thought of it. And I will cover him with fresh balms, removing those which are certainly all tainted on his countless wounds. I will do so because the other women will look like convolvuli after a downpour. But it grieves me to have to do it with these hands of mine, accustomed to caressing lustfully, and to have to approach His Holiness with this stained body of mine. I should like to have the hand of the Virgin Mother to accomplish this last unction. Mary is now weeping silently without sobbing. How different she is from the theatrical Mary always shown to us. She is weeping noiselessly as she did on that day of her forgiveness in the house of the Pharisee. Are you saying that the women will be afraid? Peter asks. Not afraid, but they will be upset seeing his body, which is certainly already rotten. Swollen, black. And then, and this is certain, they will be afraid of the guards. Do you want me to come with John? Certainly not. We women are all going. Because as we were all up there, so it is fair that we should all be around his deathbed. You and John will remain here. She cannot remain alone. Is she not coming? We are not letting her come. She is convinced that he will rise from the dead. What do you think? I, after Mary, am the one who believes more. I have always believed that that could be. He said so, and he never lies. Never. Oh, before I used to call him Jesus, Master, Savior, Lord. Now I feel that he is so great that I do not know. I dare not give him a name anymore. What shall I say to him when I see him? But do you really think that he will rise? Another one. Oh, by dint of telling you that I do believe, and of hearing you say that you do not believe, I will end up by not believing anymore myself. I have believed, and I do believe. I have believed, and a long time ago, I prepared a garment for him. And tomorrow, as tomorrow is the third day, I will bring it here to have it ready. But if you say that he will be black, swollen, filthy. Filthy, never. Sin is filthy. But, of course, he will be black. So, was Lazarus not already putrid? And yet he rose, and his body was healed. But if I say so, be quiet, you misbelievers. My human reason says also to me, he is dead and will not rise. But my spirit, his spirit, because I have received a new spirit from him, shouts resounding like blares of silver trumpets. He will rise. He will rise. He will rise. Why do you hurl me like a little boat against the cliffs of your doubts? I believe. I believe, my Lord. Although torn by grief, Lazarus has obeyed the Master and has remained in Bethany. I, who know who Lazarus of Theophilus is, a strong man, not a fearful leveret, can appreciate the sacrifice he made by remaining in the shade and not near the Master. But he obeyed, and by such obedience he has been more heroical than if with weapons he had snatched him from armed men. I have believed, and I believe, and I am staying here, waiting like her. But let me go. It is daybreak. As soon as there is enough light, we will go to the sepulchre. And the Magdalene goes away, her face flushed with weeping, but always brave. She goes back into Mary's room. What was the matter with Peter? A nervous fit, but he has got over it. Do not be severe, Mary. He suffers. So do I. But you know that not even once have I asked a pitying caress of you. He has already been cured by you. On the contrary, I think that you alone, Mother, are in need of a balsam. My holy, beloved Mother. But take heart. Tomorrow is the third day. We shall lock ourselves in here, the two of us, his lovers. You, the holy lover. I, the poor lover. But I love him as much as I can with my whole self, and we will wait for him. The rest, those who do not believe, we will lock them in over there with their doubts. And I will put many roses here. I will have the chest brought here today. I will go to the mansion house and I will instruct Levi. All these horrible things must disappear. Our resurrected Lord must not see them. So many roses. And you will put on a new dress. He must not see you so. I will comb your hair. I will wash your poor face disfigured by tears. Eternal Maid, I will act as your mother. I shall have, at last, the joy of taking motherly care of a child more innocent than a newborn baby. Dear. And with her emotional exuberance, the Magdalene presses to her breast the head of Mary, who is sitting. She kisses and caresses her. She tidies the light locks of her hair ruffled behind her ears. With her linen dress, she wipes the fresh tears that stream down her cheeks again, again, always. The women come in with lights and amphorae and large-mouthed vases. Mary of Alphaeus is carrying a heavy mortar. It is not possible to stay outside. there is a weak wind that blows out the lamps," she explains. They place themselves on one side. They lay all their things on a long, narrow table. Then they give the final touch to their balms by mixing the already heavy pomade of essences in the mortar with a white powder, handfuls of which they take from a little sack. They mix, working with all their energy, and then they fill a large mouthed vase. They place it on the floor. They repeat the same operation with another vase. Perfumes and tears fall on the resins. Mary Magdalene says, "This is not the unction that I hoped I should be able to prepare for you." Because it is the Magdalene who, being more skilled than the other women, has controlled and directed the composition of the perfume, which is so strong that they decide to open the door and leave the window ajar over the garden, which is just beginning to appear in the early light of dawn. They all weep more loudly after the remark made by the Magdalene in a subdued voice. They have finished. All the vases are full. They go out with the empty amphorae, the mortar no longer useful, and many lamps. Two alone are left in the little room, and they tremble. They seem to be sobbing as well, with the flickering of their light. The women come back again, and they close the window because it is a rather cold dawn. They put on their mantles, and they take large sacks into which they put the vases of the balm. Mary stands up and looks for her mantle. But they all crowd round her, convincing her not to come. "You are not fit to stand, Mary. You have not had any food for 2 days, only a little water." "Yes, mother, we will do it quickly and well, and we shall soon be back." "Be not afraid. We will embalm him like a king. Look what precious balm we have prepared, and how much of it. We will not neglect any part of the body or any wound, and we will arrange him properly with our hands. We are strong, and we are mothers. We will place him like a child in a cradle, and the others will only have to close the place." But Mary insists. "It is my duty," she says. "I have always taken care of him. Only these last 3 years that he was in the world, I surrendered the care of him to other people. When he was far away from me, now that the world has rejected and disowned him, he is mine again, and I am once again his servant." Peter, who had approached the door with John without being seen by the women, runs away upon hearing these words. He runs to some secluded corner to bewail his sin. John remains near the door, but he does not say anything. He would like to go as well, but he makes the sacrifice of remaining with the mother. Mary Magdalene takes Mary back to her seat. She kneels in front of her. She embraces her knees, raising her sorrowful, loving face towards her, and she promises, "With his spirit, he knows and sees everything. But with my kisses, I will tell his body your love and your wish. I know what is love. I know what spur, what hunger it is to love, what nostalgia of being with whoever is our love. And that applies also to any base love that looks like gold but is filth. And when she who has sinned can understand what is the holy love for the living mercy, whom men did not know how to love, then she can understand better what is your love, mother. You know that I know how to love. And you know that he said so, that evening of my true birth, on the shores of our serene lake, that Mary knows how to love much. Now this exuberant love of mine, like water that overflows from a tilted basin, like a flowery rosary that streams down a wall. Like a flame that finding timber spreads and grows, has poured onto him. And from him, love, has drawn fresh power. Oh, my power of loving was not able to take his place on the cross. But what I was not able to do for him, to suffer and bleed and die in his place, amid the mockery of all the world, happy, happy, happy to suffer in his place. And I am certain that the thread of my poor life would have been burnt more by the triumphant love than by the infamous scaffold. And from the ashes there would have sprung up the fresh, snow-white flower of the new virgin life, unaware of everything that is not God. All that I was not able to do for him, I can still do for you. Mother, whom I love with all my heart, rely on me. I, who in the house of Simon the Pharisee knew how to gently caress his holy feet, now with my soul that opens more and more to grace, with greater gentleness, will be able to caress his holy limbs, to dress his wounds, embalming them more with my love, with the balm taken from my heart wrung by love and sorrow, than with the ointment. And death will not spoil that body that has loved so much and is so much loved. Death will flee because love is stronger. Love is invincible. And I, Mother, with your perfect love, with my total love, will embalm my King of Love. Mary kisses this impassioned woman, who at last has been able to find so much passion, and she yields to her entreaties.